This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
7:13 now, 6% chance for showers today, 80% tomorrow and Friday, and then it clears out and cools off a little bit and dries out for Saturday and Sunday. So it should be, after we get past the rainy part of it, a nice pre-fall weekend, perhaps, not quite fall-like. Larry Carter joins us now, President of Louisiana Federation of Teachers. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Let's talk about this thing that Bessie passed about rating schools. Tell me what it is that the board passed and voted in favor of doing.
Yes, it's what we called a new accountability system for all schools in the state of Louisiana, and I believe it goes into effect around 2026. Mm-hmm. But what it does is, right now the current system uses what's called a VAM modeling to actually calculate how successful students are on a number of indices like taking tests, end-of-year coursework, and other markers. And there's percentages that come out of that calculation from that system. And it's a complicated system, and it's used to also put scores on schools. That's one of the requirements that the federal government kind of places on state school districts to kind of set student achievement goals, to rate school performances, and to identify struggling schools. So this rating system, schools can be declared an A, B, C, D, or an F based on the performance of the students on tests and other markers. So the current system, again, is a very complicated system for what everybody has been, you know, talking about for the last probably 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. But the new one has changed to where now they're using percentages that was arbitrarily decided by, I guess, the administration, Dr. Brumley and his team at the Department of Education, and put percentages to kind of identify more with what we saw was growth measures to show, based on a certain percentages, if the students in a particular school grows, then that school gets X number of points towards their school grading system. So that's kind of the shift. What we're hearing is to make things simpler, but what we do hear, though, there are some indices that are not captured in those, like poverty in some cases. You know, a lot of the superintendents who took the table, I know, and had conversations about this issue, said that it doesn't capture those schools in the new system that have to deal with larger populations of students with special needs or students who come from disadvantaged backgrounds. So that's some of the arguments for and against that we've been hearing relating to the new grading system. And what we also heard yesterday, there was a convening by the House Education Committee where Superintendent Brumley came and explained and gave updates about a lot of the new legislation that would be impacting education, as well as the new model that for grading school systems. And it was interesting because some of the discussion really did really hamper around some of the processes that people can expect in the next 2 years to go through, in terms of, we had a large percentage, I think they say somewhere around 40 or 50% of the schools were rated A's or B's. That number will more than likely drop tremendously when the new system comes into place. So it'll make schools look like they were not as successful as educating kids. So it's going to be a shock, I think, a shock to the public. When they see that there's a new way of looking at the school systems than what they were maybe the previous 2 years. So people are gearing up for that discussion in terms of the education family, around how that will be perceived by the public, where it's going to be heavily skewed towards testing, where we thought we were getting away from that. This model, the newer version of the accountability system, will rely heavily on state tests to kind of measure how students are performing against their fellow students in different categories so that we can see whether or not they're up to par. And again, it's going to be, from what we hear, more of, did a school help a student to grow over a four-year period, five-year period, a six-year period, versus just the test scores measuring whether a student passed or failed.
So what we're talking about is determining whether or not a school is successful, achieving its goals or not, and the data that goes into determining that. And what Cade Brumley is saying, if I understand what you're saying correctly, is base it on tests, and to quote you, tests, tests, tests. And the superintendents are saying, well, wait a minute, now hang on a second. You got to compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges here. Before you start saying that apples are oranges, let's look at what goes into the composition of an orange or an apple. Accurate?
Accurate. That is it. That's the take I got away from the hearing on yesterday, listening to the update. And legislators were asking, you know, some questions about what that entails in terms of that there was a focus on hearing, you know, why we were going to this model. And of course, this was something I know Superintendent Brumley had tried a couple of years before to try to pivot to a new system, because I know they were looking at models from Mississippi and Florida, and they were trying to emulate some of the successes that they say those two states were having over the last couple of years in Mississippi, but maybe 10 years in Florida, and try to model the grading systems from those places to bring it here in Louisiana so that we can see hopefully some of those gains. But it does have some controversy, I'll be honest, in terms of just like they had in some of those states.
How do the teachers feel about it? Do they think it's fair or not? And how does this fall back on them?
Look, we are going to be doing a survey soon in the next couple of weeks to get some answers about those questions. There's a lot of legislation that was passed last year during the last session that is impacting the classroom as we speak. Teachers are kind of walking into this year experiencing some of those. And so we're going to do a survey to kind of ask those questions to see how they feel. Right now, we really don't know how they feel. We know there's those individuals who were plugged in during the legislative session and had some concerns during the session. Now that there's some legislation that is now law, implementation and how they're followed is where we're going to be asking for their opinions about how it's impacting them in the classroom as it relates to teaching and learning, or how they do their jobs effectively. So we're going to be doing that, and hopefully I'll be asking, you know, to come on and share the information we gather.
I want to talk about vocational courses when we come back, because I'm a little bit confused about how that factors into this, because it seems as though, on one hand, they talk about college not being for everybody and that there needs to be a path to vo-tech education, but then it seems like this would kind of hurt the school when it comes to evaluating that. We'll talk about it when we come back. Larry Carter, president of the Louisiana Federation of Teachers, trying to get a handle on the efforts to retain and recruit teachers, and we'll also talk about how that has to do with the new rating system that's going to go into effect in 2026, and there's a comment period open now. 721 Traffic Now, WWL.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
725, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Larry Carter, president of Louisiana Federation of Teachers, about this new way to rate schools and a hearing that was held to get feedback on it. So was there a majority one way or the other as to what superintendents thought, whether it would be fair or not? And I guess the other thing is looking at motives from everybody's standpoint, from the superintendent to the teachers to the school leaders. Who does this fall back on if the new system shows that schools are failing? And that's based on the fact that it's an accurate representation or an accurate evaluation, right?
Well, that's the question. I think we initially look at in terms of the new school score ratings and who's going to be in terms of when you start seeing now in 2 years, once they get the baseline, schools who were A's and B's, and I think it was high. I think it was like 60 or 70%. I think I said a little lower earlier. 60 or 70% of the schools are rated A's and B's. And now you'll have somewhere around 30% of those schools be rated at A's and B's. It's going to send, again, a shockwave throughout the system because there's a new measurement and metrics for measuring school success. And there is a lot of controversy from the superintendents, the school systems, around how the new percentage ratings will be used to reflect that. And the weight of some of those percentages are not in the same areas that for the last probably 5 to 10 years, there's been a focus with the current system on, for example, I know there was discussions about some of the percentages that was used to encapture the school leaders and the way in which they look at college and career readiness. There's a track in there where those percentages now are reduced greatly for like things like dual enrollment or career education or somebody who's like some of the students who were going for pipe fitting or plumbing or car repair or some of those. In the past, those percentages that dealt with career readiness and college readiness were 25%. It's been reduced now to just 8% in value. So school districts for the last 5 to 10 years have been spending a lot of resources in getting their students into dual enrollment courses with universities, having them participate in, you know, other ways to develop themselves for a career in college.
So let me just jump in before we run out of time here, Larry. So I understand, and I see here in this article that I'm reading from Elise Carmarcino from NOLA.com. Bill Thompson, high school agricultural science teacher from Calcasieu Parish, said that under the new model, vocational courses like his will drop from accounting to, as you just said, accounting for 25% of a school's score to 8.3%. Yes. Said the changes belie officials' claim to want to elevate career education. So what you're telling me is, although enrolled in a curriculum and ready to be ready to get out of school and take on a vo-tech job, according to this new method, that would only count for 8.3% as opposed to 25%, which would indicate less students are career ready when in fact that's anything but the case. Is that right?
Yes. It would discourage the weight of the testing measurement that you don't emphasize that career readiness part. You emphasize more of the algebra, biology, English, history, geometry, and focus on those courses as opposed to the additional courses that was given a higher weight rate based on the current school rating system. So that's a lot of concern that a lot of the superintendents and school districts and principals are struggling with. And so that will ultimately impact, like that teacher you just quoted, and how he's perceived in the school makeup in terms of importance, in terms of how the test scores in his class measure up to the test scores in those core subject content areas.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate your time.
And you're welcome.
We all know that education needs to be improved in Louisiana. The question is, how do you measure that? And are you working for outcomes, or are you working to make things look better when they really aren't? That's what it comes down to. Same really when it comes to car insurance. We'll talk with Kirk Talbot about that. We come back on WWL right now. Time for First News. Seven till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. 60% chance for showers today, 80% tomorrow and then Friday. But then come weekend, man, you're talking about highs in the mid-80s, sunshine, lower humidity. So it'll be like a little fall preseason, maybe. Look at it that way. Kirk Talbot joins us now, Louisiana State Senator. How you doing, Kirk?
Good morning, Tommy. Doing great.
Talk about, let's talk about, if you will, another meeting that's coming up. I see here that you said, when was this? Back in August, said you're going to meet every month until session, probably. Imagine a lot of package of bills will be forthcoming. You're doing everything you can to try to surface what are the reasons when it comes to high insurance rates and how to fix them. Accurate?
Yes, it is. And I'm assuming you're referring to auto insurance rates, not property, because that's what these committees are meeting on to address their auto insurance.
Sure, clear that up.
That's okay.
Yeah, but that's exactly what I'm talking about, and MarketWatch saying, and we got the highest rates in the state. Is that a fact, Kirk?
It is a fact. Every study, thing that I've seen shows that we are the highest. You know, not only are we the highest premiums in the country, but we're the most unaffordable state for auto insurance. If you look at the average income of a Louisianian and the percentage they pay for auto insurance, you know, we're number one there, which really puts a lot of pain in families' wallets.
That, and it would also think it would lead me to people that don't have insurance that are driving around.
It does. Believe it or not, we're not that bad. If you look at the 50 state rankings of uninsured motorists, we're in the middle. But underinsured motorists, we're number one because we have very low minimums in Louisiana. And that's, you know, that's a problem. But we have to fix this auto insurance problem before we can raise those minimums, because if we raise the minimums, we're going to shift a gigantic group of people into the uninsured motorist category because they simply can't afford, you know, they can barely afford the minimums now. So, you know, that's a big problem. I mean, we have a lot of drivers that are underinsured, and, you know, when you get in a wreck or someone hits you, you know, that can be a problem for all parties involved.
In terms of underinsurance, I know you only have to carry liability, and that's if your car is paid for, right? Because if not, then you're going to have to carry collision, because the people, if you have a mortgage on it, a chattel mortgage on it, they're going to want their part protected as well, whoever owns that chattel mortgage. But when it comes to people carrying liability only, how does that affect the overall insurance market? And because if I have liability only and I crash into your car, then I'm out of pocket, and I'm at fault, then I'm out of pocket for fixing your car. But if I don't have the money to fix your car, then your insurance is going to pay for it and come after me.
That's
is
right.
That accurate?
I believe it is, and it just, you know, it just keeps this cycle of, you know, problems just exacerbating on and on and on. And you know, the things that, you know, it's kind of unprecedented what we're doing right now, because usually, you know, we'll form a task force or maybe one committee will look at a problem like this. But we have, four Senate committees and three House committees that meet together, which is almost half the legislature, mm-hmm. It seems, meeting once a month on this subject. We and the speaker and the president did that because we wanted every single committee that had anything to do with insurance. And we're looking at everything from the doctor visit, the emergency room visit, the ambulance ride, the insurance premiums, you know, the litigation side of it. We're taking a really big look at every single possible factor that goes into when you get hit, and then all the way from the time of the accident to the courtroom or to the hospital or whatever, to see, you know, what is causing this in Louisiana. And I can tell you, Tommy, from what I've gathered so far, there's no reason why Louisiana should be number one. No one around us in the South is in the top 10, except for maybe Florida, but they've fixed their problem. And, you know, they're starting to get better and better. They've had four special sessions on insurance in the last, I think, 2 years. And that covers property as well. But my point is, unlike property insurance, where we live on the Gulf Coast, we have 22 parishes, you know, that are Gulf parishes. We have a majority of our people live below I-10. I understand why, property-wise, you know, we're a risk. But there's no reason why, with auto, that we should be in this predicament. And we're going to do what we can to fix it on the legislative side. And I think that these meetings are going to bear a lot of fruit.
I know there are no simple solutions to complex problems, right? But just as an outsider, you would think, okay, well, Louisiana's the highest. And we did mention Florida before. We did look to Florida for some of the things they did when it comes to property insurance and emulate some of that, Alabama as well. But when it comes to auto insurance, you would think it's like, well, okay, what are we doing that makes it the highest? And the states where it's lower, what are they doing that makes it lower? And why don't we just do what they're doing and not do what we're doing? Is it that simple?
It is, in a way. And look, in my opinion, there's two reasons why our rates are where they are. One is accidents with bodily injury. That means, I mean, if you take every 100 accidents, you know, statistically X amount are going to have bodily injury. We're double the national average, even though we have the same body.
So wait, let me jump in for a second right there. That makes me ask, So are the collisions at higher velocity? Is it physics? Are people being banged up more? Or is it nudge, wink, wink injuries?
It just is what it is. I mean, we've looked at road conditions, believe it or not. We all know we have bad roads, but we don't have the worst roads in the country. Mm-hmm. And states that have worse roads than us have very affordable insurance rates. We look at miles driven. We looked at fatalities. We're not outliers in any of those areas. But again, accidents with bodily injury, we're double the national average. And then payouts for bodily injury claims is double the national average. So it's simple business. Dollars come in the forms of premium. Dollars go out in the forms of paying claims. You have to have the premiums higher than the claims, or you're not going to be in business. And we've already seen a lot of commercial companies leave Louisiana because they simply can't make money here. And if they can't make money, they're not going to stay here.
And go ahead.
I'm just saying with those payouts, double the national average, that's why our premiums are higher. So we've got to figure out why that is, why we have double the amount of personal injury accidents, you know, with bodily injury in Louisiana. And, you know, that's kind of what we're drilling down to on a lot of levels with these hearings. And the next one is Friday.
Yeah, I think I might have said that backward. Liability pays for what you did to the other guy's car up to an extent. It doesn't fix your own car. That's what I think I said, right?
I believe so.
I think so, yeah.
Look, you know,
collision protects your car if you're at fault, and that's why you have the car is financed, they're going to want you to have collision.
Right.
Yeah.
And Tommy, you know, I've heard that, you know, I've served under three governors now, and, you know, you hear them all say, we want to grow Louisiana, we want to grow good jobs, we want to retain our best and brightest. If you can't afford auto insurance in this state, I don't know how you attain any of those goals, you know.
Seven till eight. Tommy Tucker, WWL. 60% chance for showers today, 80% tomorrow, and then Friday. But then, come weekend, man, you're talking about highs in the mid 80s, sunshine, lower humidity. So it'll be like a little fall preseason, maybe. Look at it that way. Kirk Talbot joins us now, Louisiana State Senator. How you doing, Kirk?
Good morning, Tommy. Doing great.
Let's talk about, if you will, another meeting that's coming up. I see here that you said, when was this? Back in August, said you're going to meet every month until session, probably. Imagine a lot of package of bills will be forthcoming. You're doing everything you can to try to surface what are the reasons when it comes to high insurance rates and how to fix them. Accurate?
Yes, it is. And I'm assuming you're referring to auto insurance rates, not property, because that's what these committees are meeting on to address their auto insurance.
Should have cleared that up.
That's okay.
Yeah, but that's exactly what I'm talking about, and Market Watch saying, and we got the highest rates in the state. Is that a fact, Kirk?
It is a fact. Every study, thing that I've seen shows that we are the highest. You know, not only are we the highest premiums in the country, but we're the most unaffordable state for auto insurance. If you look at the average income of a Louisianian and the percentage they pay for auto insurance, you know, we're number one there, which really puts a lot of pain in families' wallets.
That, and it would also think it would lead me to people that don't have insurance that are driving around.
It does. Believe it or not, we're not that bad. If you look at the 50 state rankings of uninsured motorists, we're in the middle, but underinsured motorists, we're number one because we have very low minimums in Louisiana. And that's, you know, that's a problem, but we have to fix this auto insurance problem before we can raise those minimums. Because if we raise the minimums, we're going to shift a gigantic group of people into the uninsured motorist category because they simply can't afford, you know, they can barely afford the minimums now. So, you know, that's a big problem. I mean, we have a lot of drivers that are underinsured, and, you know, when you get in a wreck or someone hits you, you know, that can be a problem for all parties involved.
In terms of underinsurance, I know you only have to carry liability, and that's if your car is paid for, right? Because if not, then you're going to have to carry collision because the people, if you have a mortgage on it, a chattel mortgage on it, they're going to want their part protected as well, whoever owns that chattel mortgage. But when it comes to people carrying liability only, how does that affect the overall insurance market. And because if I have liability only and I crash into your car, then I'm out of pocket, and I'm at fault, then I'm out of pocket for fixing your car. But if I don't have the money to fix your car, then your insurance is going to pay for it and come after me.
That's
is
right.
that accurate?
I believe it is, and it just, you know, it just keeps this cycle of, you know, problems just exacerbating on and on and on. And you know, the things that, you know, it's kind of unprecedented what we're doing right now, because usually, you know, we'll form a task force or maybe one committee will look at a problem like this. But we have, four Senate committees and three House committees that meet together, which is almost half the legislature, mm-hmm. it seems, meeting once a month on this subject. We and the Speaker and the President did that because we wanted every single committee that had anything to do with insurance. And we're looking at everything from the doctor visit, the emergency room visit, the ambulance ride, the insurance premiums, you know, the litigation side of it. We're taking a really big look at every single possible factor that goes into when you get hit, and then all the way from the time of the accident to the courtroom or to the hospital or whatever, to see, you know, what is causing this in Louisiana. And I can tell you, Tommy, from what I've gathered so far, there's no reason why Louisiana should be number one. No one around us in the South is in the top 10, except for maybe Florida, but they've fixed their problem, and, you know, they're starting to get better and better. They've had four special sessions on insurance in the last, I think, 2 years, and that covers property as well. But my point is, unlike property insurance, where we live on the Gulf Coast, we have 22 parishes, you know, that are Gulf parishes. We have a majority of our people live below I-10. I understand why, property-wise, you know, we're a risk. But there's no reason why, with auto, that we should be in this predicament. And we're going to do what we can to fix it on the legislative side. And I think that these meetings are going to bear a lot of fruit.
I know there are no simple solutions to complex problems, right? But just as an outsider, you would think, okay, well, Louisiana's the highest. And we did mention Florida before. We did look to Florida for some of the things they did when it comes to property insurance and emulate some of that, Alabama as well. But when it comes to auto insurance, you would think it's like, well, okay, what are we doing that makes it the highest? And the states where it's lower, what are they doing that makes it lower? And why don't we just do what they're doing and not do what we're doing? Is it that simple?
It is, in a way. And look, in my opinion, there's two reasons why our rates are where they are. One is accidents with bodily injury. That means, I mean, if you take every 100 accidents, you know, statistically X amount are going to have bodily injury. We're double the national average, even though we have the same body.
So wait, let me jump in for a second right there. That makes me ask, so are the collisions at higher velocity? Is it physics? Are people being banged up more? Or is it wink, wink injuries?
It just is what it is. I mean, we've looked at road conditions. Believe it or not, we all know we have bad roads, but we don't have the worst roads in the country. Mm-hmm. And states that have worse roads than us have very affordable insurance rates. We look at miles driven. We looked at fatalities. We're not outliers in any of those areas. But again, accidents with bodily injury, we're double the national average. And then payouts for bodily injury claims is double the national average. So it's simple business. Dollars come in the forms of premium. Dollars go out in the forms of paying claims. You have to have the premiums higher than the claims, or you're not going to be in business. And we've already seen a lot of commercial companies leave Louisiana because they simply can't make money here. And if they can't make money, they're not going to stay here.
And go ahead.
I'm just saying those payouts double the national average. That's why our premiums are higher. So we've got to figure out why that is, why we have double the amount of personal injury accidents, you know, with bodily injury in Louisiana. And, you know, that's kind of what we're drilling down to on a lot of levels with these hearings. And the next one is Friday.
Yeah, I think I might have said that backward. Liability pays for what you did to the other guy's car up to an extent. It doesn't fix your own car. That's what I think I said, right?
I believe so.
I think so.
Look, you know, when you look at
collision protects your car. If you're at fault, and that's why, if you have the car's finance, they're going to want you to have collision.
Right.
Yeah.
And Tommy, you know, I've heard that, you know, every I've served under three governors now, and you know, you hear them all say, we want to grow Louisiana, we want to grow good jobs, we want to retain our best and brightest. If you can't afford auto insurance in this state, I don't know how you attain any of those goals. You know, we have a lower class that has been kept down because they can't afford a vehicle. And, you know, when you afford a vehicle, you know, you're a lot more employable, right? You can get a better job. You can shop in a better area. You can move to a better neighborhood maybe. But, you know, especially on the commercial side, if you're trying to grow a small business and you can't afford a commercial vehicle, let's say if you're an electrician or a plumber, I don't know how we grow our economy and how we reach the potential that we know Louisiana can. And we look at the rest of the South, they're going through a renaissance right now, except Louisiana. You know, we're losing population. No one else is in the South. They're all growing. Affordability of insurance has to play a part in that. I believe it does. And that's why, you know, this is we cannot let this go. And we've got to keep doing this until we find a solution.
Let me take a break, Kirk. We'll pick it up. We come back. I'm getting a ton of texts. And you know what everybody's saying. It's about before you accept a quick check with me. And you watch TV in the afternoon waiting for the news as I do. And man, it seems like, you know, you got a game show on one channel and the commercials come on. It's like a game show with the lawyers where, you know, hey, you got in a wreck. You hit the jackpot. Let me see what I can do for you. And that's not the way it's supposed to work. I don't know how you fix it, but we'll talk about it. We come back with Kirk Talbot, Louisiana State Senator, holding another hearing on auto insurance and why it's so expensive. What can they do to fix it? If you've got any questions or comments, 504-260-1870. One repeating theme here is tort reform. We'll talk about it when we come back. Traffic now, WWL. 7:58 until 8 o'clock. Senator Kirk Talbot, our guest, talking about high auto insurance rates, and the texts come in back and forth, about how, you know, if you get hurt, you deserve to be compensated. Other people saying it's all about ambulance chasing attorneys. I'm sure the truth is somewhere in between. What do other states do? Because, look, if you drive around in other states, you see billboards for attorneys all over the place. It's not just Louisiana. You there, Kirk?
No, on I-10 in Mississippi and Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here.
Not just there, but Tennessee and everything else. So what's the next step? What can we hope for? What kind of results can we look for?
I think you're going to see some proposed legislation come out of these meetings and some ideas. I don't see how that couldn't happen with that many legislators meeting and taking that deep of a dive into this subject. That's what typically happens, and I think this will be no exception.
Everybody's got a horse in the race, though, right?
They do. And you know, look, I don't want to run lawyers out of town. I might get hit today.
And that's
I want to get my
point.
Car fixed, and I want to get my
that's
injuries
right.
paid for, too. So we just got to find a balance. And, you know, we got 49 other examples to look at, and they're all better than us.
Thank you, Kirk. Appreciate your time. Good luck. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Ronald Surpass, take a weekly deep dive into crime and policing. Almost two-thirds of the year in the books, how's violent crime in 2024 compared to previous years? That and more when we return here on WWL. 7:58, 2 until 8 o'clock. Senator Kirk Talbot, our guest, talking about high auto insurance rates, and the texts come in back and forth, about how, you know, if you get hurt, you deserve to be compensated. Other people saying it's all about ambulance chasing attorneys. I'm sure the truth is somewhere in between. What do other states do? Because, look, if you drive around in other states, you see billboards for attorneys all over the place. It's not just Louisiana. You there, Kirk?
No, on I-10 in Mississippi and Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here.
Not just there, but Tennessee and everything else. So what's the next step? What can we hope for? What kind of results can we look for?
I think you're going to see some proposed legislation come out of these meetings and some ideas. I don't see how that couldn't happen with that many legislators meeting and taking that deep of a dive into this subject. That's what typically happens, and I think this will be no exception.
Everybody's got a horse in the race, though, right?
They do. And you know, look, I don't want to run lawyers out of town. I might get hit today.
And that's
I want to get my
point.
Car fixed, and I want to get my
that's
injuries
right.
paid for, too. So we just got to find a balance. And, you know, we got 49 other examples to look at, and they're all better than us.
Thank you, Kirk. Appreciate your time. Good luck. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Ronald Surpass, take a weekly deep dive into crime and policing. almost two-thirds of the year in the books. How's violent crime in 2024 compared to previous years? That and more when we return here on WWL.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.